Well, as these questions persist about the rollout of bushfire aid, the federal government today will outline how the next $650 million tranche of that $2 billion will be shared by bushfire-affected communities. The package will be spent reviving damaged economies, restoring wildlife habitats, and restocking farms. Meanwhile, some farmers are facing a different threat, with China poised to impose tariffs of up to 80% on Australian barley imports, viewed by some as retaliation by Beijing over Scott Morrison's push for an inquiry into the origins of the COVID-19 virus. David Littleproud is the Minister for Agriculture and for Emergency Management. Minister, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks for having me, Fran.
As you just heard there, businesses devastated by the fires aren't applying for government assistance in many cases. Councils desperate for help aren't getting it. You set aside $2 billion for bushfire recovery. How much of that money, can you tell us today, is actually getting through to where it's needed the most?
So there's been over $1.3 billion committed, and the first tranche of that is about relief. So that was about getting money in people's pockets to get them through the here and now, and that was through $1,000 per adult and $400 per child that were impacted, and then obviously the flow-on of the small business grants of $10,000 and then the loans of $50,000 for small businesses who had damage and $75,000 for farmers. Now, all those, bar the $1,000 per adult, $400 per child program, is run by the states. We give them the money and we work with them to try and get that money out the door as quickly as we can. We expect by June 30 over $1 billion will have gone out of the taxpayers' hand and into those victims' hands and pockets to get them back up on their feet. And that's why this next tranche is about the recovery. So that was about relief in the here and now. Now this is about the recovery. We've sat and listened and had the Andrew Colvin and his team out there along with the states who lead this, and we simply cut the check, but we're working with them collaboratively. And where they need help, where they need a bit of assistance to get this out the door quicker, we've been there. And that's why we put on an additional 20-odd staff to help them and to help people fill out the paperwork. You've got to understand,
okay, but how's
this
that
is
going?
Australian,
I mean,
taxpayers'
we just
money.
There, we just heard there from Rebecca Sharkey from Mayo, which was obviously fire-affected, and Helen Haynes in Indi, both of them saying that Rebecca Sharkey said only a handful of concessional loans had been approved in her electorate. Helen Haynes says the take-up of the small business grants has been really, really slow, and of the loans as well. I mean, if this is about relief, people aren't getting the relief, it would seem. And the process is not only difficult, it's opaque, is what we just heard there.
Well, with respect, the numbers don't demonstrate that, particularly for the $10,000 small business grant. Over 13,000 small businesses have taken that up. That's a considerable amount. And the numbers on the loans for farmers and small businesses continues to rise. We've tried to simplify that at the behest of the states. They're the ones that are rolling it out, and they're the ones that come back and give us advice about can we change it. Everything that they've asked to change to make this more streamlined, we've given to them. With respect to the councils, the $1 million up front was already put in there to ensure that that got them through the immediacy of this. But there's always been and always has been a standing arrangement around disaster recovery repayments between state and Commonwealth. And what happens is the local governments make that assessment, they put it back to the states, and then they apply under Category A, B, C funding or defunding. And every assessment that has been sent through has been approved. So local governments knows quite clearly what the process is. And then what we're doing now is topping this up with over $450 million of money to help them recover. And that's not just councils. Councils won't be the only determinant of where this money will be spent. It'll be their community, because it'll be industries within some of those communities that will be best placed to tell where this money should be spent.
I want to come to that in just a second, but just before we leave the grants and this complaint about the applications are too complicated, do you know, you said 13,000 have received these 10,000 grants. How many have been denied and how many are still waiting to be assessed? Do you know that?
Not that granular level, but I'm more than happy to provide that. In fact, we're getting weekly updates from the states around each one of those programs, as well as the cleanup. We're cleaning up all the houses and damaged properties out there. For the first time, the Commonwealth and state are sharing that cost, and we're proud of that. We're getting on with the job, and we're asking the states to do that, and they're doing a good job. So we get updates every week to ensure that there is momentum, and when we saw that there was a roadblock, we acted swiftly a couple of months ago to put on more staff to support the states, and we're not blaming anybody. And I think that doesn't help. It's about actually acting swiftly and being agile enough that when you see a problem, we don't blame them. We get in and help them.
What we heard there was that people are feeling forgotten. They've been pushed into the background, I think, by the pandemic is how they're feeling. Rebecca Sharkey from Centre Alliance says Andrew Colvin, the head of the Bushfire Recovery Agency, should come before the COVID-19 Senate inquiry because bushfire-affected communities are feeling the heat from these dual disasters. Is that a good idea in your view?
Well, Andrew Colvin has an open door to every politician in this country and every community. In fact, I've made sure that he's been available to give briefings to the opposition and to the crossbench at every occasion. And,
would it be a good idea if he fronted the inquiry?
I have no issues whatsoever. There's nothing to hide here. This is Australian taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. We want to get it out the door. We want to get it into the hands of those people that have been impacted. You've got to understand there still needs to be paperwork. And I get the frustration where people say it's hard. But we have had cases of people defrauding the Commonwealth by the Australian taxpayers' generosity. And we've got to make sure we protect the Australian taxpayer and get that balance right. And that's why we put people out on the ground to try and help them fill the paperwork out to ease that burden.
Let's go to what you're going to announce today. Of the $650 million, the centrepiece is that $450 million you talked about for the local recovery plans. How will that work? Will it be up to, you say it's not just local councils, it's local communities, how to spend it? Are you going to set up local oversight committees? How much oversight will the federal government have?
Well, we'll obviously have input, but we want it to be a locally led recovery, not a Canberra led. And one of the other guiding principles is that we want to build back better. This is an opportunity to not just do the same thing over and over again, but if there's an opportunity to do something better, then we should. And there's 10 regions that have been identified as the hardest impacted. And what we're doing is sitting down with them, leading with their civic leaders and industry. So in some communities, it'll be agriculture that is the predominant industry that's been impacted, that's hurt their economy and will be the cornerstone of their recovery. In others, it'll be tourism. And that's why we didn't want a cookie-cutter approach, but we needed to bring the community leaders together to shape what recovery looks like, what building back better looks like, not from Canberra, but from them. And the states have also committed to kicking the tin on this, and I have to congratulate them on that because this puts more money out there and expedites that recovery process.
I want to get to the Bali threat from China, but just before I leave this, given the sports rot saga is still very fresh, how can taxpayers be assured that the allocation of this money will be free of political considerations?
Well, we'll make sure that it's transparent because the community will be driving it. I don't intend to have...
Who has final say?
Well, it will obviously come back. It'll be recommended back to me as the minister through Andrew Colvin. But Andrew Colvin will also have, as part of it, a board that he will chair, and that board will then provide me with the recommendations. I don't
intend to get into... And you'll accept those recommendations?
Of course I will, because I'm not going to be on the ground in these 10 regions at every one of those meetings. I expect them, they're paid to get out on the ground and to listen to these people. I think it's important there is transparency, and if they make those recommendations to me, unless there is something glaring and an anomaly, there is no reason for me to interfere in whatsoever. That's what I've charged Andrew Colvin with responsibility doing, and that's what I have great confidence in him in achieving.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 7 minutes to 8. Our guest is the Federal Agriculture Minister and Emergency Response Minister, David Littleproud. Minister, the threats by China to slap tariffs, hefty tariffs, of close to 80% on our barley exports. How hard is the government going to fight this? And would we fight it all the way to the WTO?
Well, we'll get a better lens on that on the 19th of May, but this has been a protracted issue that's been going for some 18 months. We can test quite clearly that we do not subsidise and we have not dumped barley into China. We expect to be able to demonstrate that to Chinese officials, and we've been trying to do that for some 18 months, and we'll continue to work with them. We'll see what the report comes back on the 19th, and then from that, as the Trade Minister has quite rightly determined, if we believe that the independent umpire should make a determination on this because we don't believe in the outcome, then we will possibly test that with the WTO. That's what the umpire's there for, and that's what we would test if we feel aggrieved that our position hasn't been properly accepted or understood.
This 10-day timeline now, do you see that as retaliation for Australia's call for that global inquiry?
Well, I'd hope not. But as I say, this has been a protracted process and it was coming to a juncture in any case. So obviously, some will commentate. I think it's more important that we maturely work through this and see what comes out on the 19th of May. And I think we'll get a better lens on that. But Australia continues to contest that we have nothing to hide. We have nothing to fear. We have done the right thing. We are good global citizens and we'll continue to do that with trade because that underpins agriculture.
Just finally on another issue, the Eden Monaro by-election turned into a fairly unedifying spectacle for the Nationals. John Barilaro's position as leader of the New South Wales Nats is now under threat from some of his colleagues who are furious with his conduct, one state National MP accusing him of, quote, embarrassing the party. Do you think John Barilaro has embarrassed the Nats?
I'll leave that to the general public, but I don't think self-indulgence in the middle of pandemics and bushfires is what the public were looking for. It got away from all of us. We've got to accept that. We've got to accept the responsibility, understand it, have a good hard look at ourselves and make sure it never happens again.
And what do you describe John Barilaro's behaviour as self-indulgent? And is that the fact that he put up his hand to stand and then pulled out, or that he leaked those details of a text conversation where he was absolutely scathing about the national leader, the federal leader, Michael McCormick?
Well, exactly. I mean, let's be honest. That is not the behaviour that we expect during these periods or at any time. We're all better than that, and they're just anomalies. They're outliers, and I know that probably on reflection it wasn't what John wanted to see happen, and I've heard him actually say that on other broadcasts. So it's important that we learn from this, put it behind us, and get on with the job of looking after those people that have been impacted by bushfires, which he has sole responsibility in New South Wales on, working collaboratively together to get on with the job to get this right.
Just briefly, as late as Friday, Barnaby Joyce, your colleague, told us here on Breakfast that John Barilaro, he was urging him to contest Eden Monaro, given John Barilaro told Michael McCormick, quote, you failed your team and failed as a leader. Would there be a place for him in the Nationals party room in Canberra?
Well, he's already said and ruled out that both he and his family have decided he won't be running for federal politics. In fact, he'll be leaving politics in 2023. I think we should respect that and let his family and him get on with their lives, and he get on with the job of bushfire recovery in New South Wales.
David Littleproud, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
David Littleproud is the Deputy Nationals Leader and Minister for Agriculture and Emergency Management.